This is Delta Affairs Weekly, the show where we talk about the issues important to the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Thank you for tuning in. The effects of heroin spread beyond the user. Family members and people close to the person on the drug often need treatment as well.
It can be up to years sometimes to heal from the consequences of living with a family member with addiction.
Terry Forst is a behavioral health clinician at the Bethel Family Clinic. She helps people seeking recovery from addiction. She also helps people who've been affected along the way. I talk with Forst about how to recognize addictive behaviors, how to set boundaries, and how to help both yourself and someone who might be using the drug.
For people who are suffering from addiction, we will do an assessment, which is a 1.5 hour to 2 hour sitting down with a counselor, really finding out what they're using, their frequency, the severity, how far addiction's progressed, and then you'll get a recommendation for a level of treatment, and then we'll help people get into the treatment center of their choice if that's what they'd like.
Okay, and then what about someone who's coming to you because they know someone who's using heroin?
So we provide family services, and that can be just sitting down with a family who doesn't know what to do or doesn't know if they should confront the person or if they know someone is already using, and we just kind of teach them how to take the steps on what they can do next. So that can look a number of different ways. So we do provide intervention services, and that's if they would like to intervene on the addict, maybe expected, unexpected, but really, just if the family calls us, we'll sit down with them and decide what the best next step is through education.
What behaviors might indicate that someone is using heroin?
Really, we look at a lot of different things. Some can be physical symptoms, behavioral symptoms, and then other indirect signs. So with physical symptoms, sometimes there can be dry mouth, dry coughs, flushed skin, small pupils, a lot of different physical signs, whether someone's using or maybe in withdrawals. So something that is going to be usually what people see, family members, is the behavioral signs. Those are things people are behaving in ways that is abnormal for them or different for them. Maybe not going to work on time as much, missing work, missing school, those types of things. Money is usually the first thing that people notice, is someone had money and then they don't, and large amounts are going out with nothing to be shown for it. So those are usually some of the things people will notice first. And then paraphernalia is a big one, seeing tinfoil or spoons, lighters, needles, those types of things on the person or in their homes.
Okay, so let's say someone notices some of these behaviors or these indicators. What's the next step?
If they feel comfortable with confronting the person, that can be very powerful. Is, you know, I've noticed this, I'm worried about you, what's going on? And that sometimes is enough for that person to reach out and be ready for help. Sometimes it's not, and they're not going to admit it, but that person still needs to listen to their gut. To, if they think there's a problem, call one of us, any counselor at YKHC or here at the family clinic, and ask, what can I do? And we can sit down and talk about some of the things they've noticed and how they can take some next steps, whether it's with an intervention or some more confrontation with more education.
Okay, so having that initial conversation with someone, what works, what doesn't work?
So what doesn't work is shaming, judging, anger, blaming. Those types of conversations don't usually go very well, but being supportive and caring, coming from a place of love and support, is usually very, very helpful.
What's kind of a script that someone could follow if they just kind of need a place to start?
I always just say for them to be open and honest and say what they've noticed and what they're feeling about that. You know, I noticed that you're missing a lot of work, and usually you were really dedicated to work, so I'm concerned about you, I'm worried, let's talk about what might be going on. And just coming from a really concerned place of love.
And so let's say someone, they've had that initial conversation, and then they're coming to you because they need to seek some counseling. They're not using drugs, but they're in proximity with someone who is, and they need some help dealing with that. How would you talk to that person?
That's always recommended. Even if the addict doesn't want to get professional help, the family still can, and that can be a very healing experience for the family to learn about boundaries that they might want to set to help keep themselves safe and distanced from the addiction and the addict behavior. But usually we just go for a family assessment and do kind of see where the family's at, where they need. Usually it's with education about addiction, the disease process, and helping families understand once addictions progress to a certain place that it's no longer a choice anymore, that it's the brains involved and the addiction is going to be difficult to intervene on, and how the family can stay safe and away from the addiction in that process.
What's the most important thing for someone to understand if one of their loved ones is addicted, just so they can hold a healthy perspective of that person?
I really try to help families understand the disease model of addiction and how, yes, initially picking up a drug in the beginning was a choice, but once the brain system gets involved in addiction and it's progressed far enough that it's no longer a choice. I've never met an addict who says, you know, I want to be addicted, I want this life. I've never met someone who has said that. It's just the power of the drug and the power of addiction that keeps them in it. So once families can understand that, it usually takes away a lot of the anger and the blame, and they can come from more of a place of concern and support.
And let's talk about setting boundaries. How can someone do that in a way that protects themselves, but can also protect the relationship if that's possible? Maybe it's not possible.
Mm-hmm. That's really going to be tailored specifically to each family and what their relationships are and who's involved in the family, kids, parents, that type of thing. But one place I will start with boundaries is helping people understand enabling versus loving, and helping people understand that enabling helps the addiction continue, even though they might think that they're just supporting and loving somebody. So I use a specific chart that talks about different ways that people enable, and that's giving them cash when they ask for it, or, you know, paying for cars and phones, things that are often used to obtain drugs. Giving them a place to live is another one that allows them to usually continue in the addiction. And then bailing them out of jail, those types of things are all sometimes enabling that can help the addiction continue. Loving would be, you know, giving them food instead of cash, things that they can't turn around and use for drugs, helping them to understand that they expect the person to get help, that they want them to, and then tell the addict that they're getting help themselves. Sometimes that's enough. You know, if my family's doing it, maybe I should too. Sometimes that's enough. So really understanding enabling versus loving and how to do that.
And if someone comes to you, usually a family member, how long do they come see you? How frequently do they come see you?
Gosh, that varies completely. There's no one answer to that. For people who are working on like an intervention that's going to happen quick, you know, it's a very acute case, I can see them multiple times a week to work on what we need to get to the intervention place. If it's somebody who, you know, has been working with a family member for a long time and it's just, you know, they've continued in their addiction and they want to get well, the family themselves, you know, we can do family therapy. It can be up to years sometimes to heal from the consequences of living with a family member with addiction.
And what is it that people are healing from?
A lot of the consequences with addiction, there's lying, manipulating, theft, forgery, you know, a lot of different behaviors that you don't expect from your family members, betrayal, those types of things. A lot of times you've had to take over responsibilities from the addict, take care of their children or their finances, those types of things, and that can be really taxing on families.
At any point, does law enforcement enter this process?
Not on my side of things. People who come to me, it's a confidential conversation protected under federal law. So I don't get law enforcement involved. It's absolutely the family's choice if they want to or not. And sometimes that is what works, is if family members do report them or, you know, that type of thing. And sometimes that gets the addict the consequence that put them into being able to go into recovery and into treatment. But I myself don't involve law enforcement unless there's a particular safety issue at that exact moment.
What do you think is going to be the most effective way that people can help mitigate or even stop heroin use happening in Bethel in the Delta?
I'm a treatment provider, so I'm always going to come from the treatment perspective. You can take all the drugs off the street, but that's not going to take away the addicts. You know, we need them to seek treatment, to provide good quality, long-term recovery services. And I think that's what solves this, is for those who are suffering now is treatment, and then for those who haven't yet is the education and prevention, which is really what we were working on last Monday when we went to the schools and showed the movie and discussed the consequences of choosing to use drugs.
And what do you think effective education looks like?
I think that's a hard one. That's what everybody's working on, is what does work. And I think showing movies just like we did of real life people. I wish that we had people who would be able to be in person and telling their stories and letting people learn from their mistakes and their process. So anybody who's willing to come forward about their own stories of recovery is really, really powerful.
So at the community discussion last Monday that was held on heroin, Rose Dominick gave a very powerful testimony saying that someone in her family who she loves has an addiction, and she said that she's had to work over a very long time, very hard on separating the person from the person's behavior, and that that's something that's helped her. How can someone do that?
That really comes from the treatment process, the family therapy process that she talked about, how her and her family have learned about addiction and what is part of their family member and what is the behaviors of the addiction. I think that's a very complex process that people can learn through the family therapy process.
How does that start? How does that separation, how do you start doing that in your mind?
It really comes from learning about it, about addiction first, is, you know, how it works in the brain and recognizing that the addicted brain does not make choices based off of logic, but off of the power of the drug. So really, I think that starts with learning about addiction.
And when family members start coming to you for counseling, what should their expectations be?
It's different every time for different family members, but you can expect similar things each time would be that it's going to start with an assessment, which is a conversation about how things are going now, what their lives look like, what they would like to get from the process of counseling. So that's the first conversation. And then from there, just kind of figuring out some goals for our time together and working towards those goals.
And what should their expectations be for their loved one or the person they know who has an addiction?
That's also varies. The numbers we see now are about 20 to 30% of people who were addicted to heroin do get into long-term recovery. So that's, you know, a percentage of people that will be in long-term recovery. The others, it may take a while. It may take forever. We don't know. So they can know it's going to be a long process. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be time consuming, but it's going to be worth it.
With the community of Bethel knowing that this problem is here, and it's not just here, it's a nationwide epidemic, how should people in the community be viewing this issue, and what should they be doing to help it, if they can do anything?
I would just say, what we're doing now is talking about it. This has gotten a lot more attention than other issues recently, and that's huge. Addiction is secrecy. It's very rooted in secrets, and so this alone, just talking about it, radio shows and community forums coming together, expressing concerns, asking questions, learning about it is huge. The more that people understand addiction and heroin, the better we can serve.
And what do you think is missing from the conversation and needs to be added?
I think we're missing people who are willing to talk about their own stories. There are a couple, but I think it's extremely powerful when people can see others go through what they're going through and how they came out on the other side. So we need more people who are willing to talk about their own stories.
And if someone does share their own story with someone, what should the person who's listening, what should their reaction be that's helpful?
Non-judgmental and supportive. A lot of it's going to be just listening, being able to listen to the person's story and acknowledge it and thank them for sharing such deep information, ask them if there's anything they can do to support them throughout this process. Judgment, you know, how could you do that, or why would you ever do that? Those types of statements aren't going to help anybody. And feel free to ask questions. I think if people are willing to share their story, then they're at a place where sometimes they are able to answer questions, but in a very non-judgmental, supportive way is the important part.
And then also, so something that people were talking about at the community discussion related to that is just, gosh, everyone seems to know everybody, and I don't want to come out with my story, or I don't want to approach someone because it's just uncomfortable. How can people overcome that?
I would say, I mean, that's a completely reasonable feeling. There's definitely a stigma with addiction still, and that's something that we as a community can work on, is that it not stigmatizing it, learning about addiction and understanding how the brain works with addiction will help decrease the stigma and the anger and the blame. But definitely it takes a lot of courage to come forward with your story, and there will be people who aren't accepting and who are judgmental, but there will be a large group of people who have experienced the same story who are going to be extremely thankful and moved by that story. So I'd say, you know, kind of gathering in like-minded places where other people who may have been suffering from addiction are sharing their stories, and just kind of congregating to support each other in that way.
What's the hope in all of this?
The hope for me is the 20 to 30% who go into long-term recovery. That's a lot of people. When you think about how many people are suffering from addiction, 20 to 30% is a lot of people. And those are the people that we work for. And then those that are in the other percentage, we will continue to work for them. So not forgetting about this, not letting the hype of all of this go away, because the addictions will continue, and we need to always be talking about it, be open about it, fighting the stigmas, and providing resources for people.
Terry, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Terry Forst is a behavioral health clinician at the Bethel Family Clinic. This is Delta Affairs Weekly. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.